Hey guys, it's Macy here. There's an upcoming Matthew 25 service opportunity Tuesday, February 26th, 5:30 to 7:30. And I just really like Matthew 25 because it's a great opportunity to serve and you feel good knowing you helped people and you can also make strong relationships through serving. So be there.
And thumbs up, Macy. Appreciate that. I'm going to ask everybody to do something a little bit unusual. In fact, I don't think I've ever asked anybody in this assembly to do this. So this will be a first. Please get out your devices. Everybody get out your phones. And I want to mention that if you are on the email list through our database, you should have received an email this morning about 8 o'clock or thereafter. So I'm going to ask you if you would, over the next minute or so, check your inbox and see if there's something there about Matthew 25 Ministries. Wanted to make this easy and convenient for you to sign up and be a part of this event. We've participated for years in Matthew 25 Ministries. It's a ministry that is based on the teaching of Jesus in Matthew 25. I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I didn't have clothing and you gave me clothes. So this ministry is one that we partner with quite frequently to do something that relates to touching and impacting people in this world and people in this nation. Matthew 25 is a group that goes out not just in the United States when there are disasters, but always is willing to head to other parts of the world as well. And it's neat that we can be a part of that as a church. So if you want to go ahead and pull that out and reply to that even today, you'll be hearing some more details about that later on. It really is, in a lot of ways, you think about where we are just in terms of technology. It really is quite amazing. What I am holding in my hand, it's not quite as nice as a lot of your phones, but it is still a smartphone, and it can do a number of things. And it's like the computer that was from 15 or 20 years ago right here in your hand. And so computers can be very helpful. They can help us do a lot of things. They can also sometimes be kind of frustrating and sometimes kind of discouraging and sometimes downright make us mad. I remember when I first started working on the computer, it was like in the early 90s. I'd done little stuff in the late 80s, but I had made the decision to start working on the word processor in putting my sermons together. And so we've been talking about this theme of reboot, and of course the idea with that is sometimes you have to reboot in order to install a program. Maybe your computer screen freezes and it's nice to know that we can reboot. But I remember here in the early 90s when I was first starting working with that word processor, I went to the computer to pull up my sermon that I worked on, do maybe a couple of final touches on it on Saturday, and then print it out. And I can't explain exactly what happened, but what did happen is that somehow on Friday, I had deleted that sermon. Now, if you're a preacher, that's a bad feeling. That is a bad feeling. And so I did what anybody else would do. I called in sick that afternoon and said, I feel I just have come down with something terrible. And I did not do that. But idea of working with computers, it's nice to know, and part of the theme of the last several weeks is the idea that we can start over, we can reboot, we can get a fresh start. We can make resolutions. God calls us to greater things. And in doing that, we understand that in getting a fresh start, we accept His grace and His forgiveness, and we confess whatever wrong we've done, and we move on, and we try to do better. And we also try to understand as well in this whole idea of living in this life and getting a fresh start, sometimes changes are forced upon us. And so last week we talked about Joseph, you remember, and he had some plans, and God kind of had a reboot in his life. And so he had to shift some things around, not the fact that God wasn't working in his life, but that God was working in his life even when we have some forced reboots in our lives. And the thing I really wanted to stress last week is this idea that God has a plan for you. And God has a plan for me. He has a plan for us. And that doesn't mean that God is in his realm and he's pulling every little string about every little thing that happens to us. And it certainly does not mean that when bad things happen to us, that God is causing those bad things to happen to us. Sometimes God allows those things to happen to us. But it's this idea that God is working in our lives. He's weaving something that's important. He is working with us and us moving forward in our destiny. And that got me kind of thinking this week about, you know, what is our game plan? What is your game plan in terms of understanding and doing the will of God in your life? And then that also got me to thinking about this. Football. Catch. Good catch. You know, tonight's the Super Bowl, right? You thought I got that wrong last week, but I didn't. I know the Super Bowl is tonight, and I also know that there is a strategy that's going on between the two teams, the Patriots and the Rams, to win and to be successful in what they're doing and want to come out on top. And that got me thinking about this idea in a lot of ways. Football is kind of like life. Notice I did not say football is life. And some people do believe football is life, but it's not. But in some ways, football is like life. Because if you're competing, you're on a team, you're working as an individual, you want to be successful, so then we ask ourselves, well, what's our win? What's my win? How can I win the Super Bowl of life, so to speak? How can I come out on top as the victor? And a lot of us would give different responses to that question. Some people might think maybe the first thing they think of is being successful financially or being secure or being successful in my career. And that may be a part of it, but I think really most of us, if we're here this morning, we're at some place in our lives in terms of thinking about our game plan and thinking about winning in our game plan, something deeper than I just want to make money and I want to be successful. Most of us are thinking about things a little deeper than that and a little bit more important than that. Am I right on that? I think most of us are here, maybe there are a couple of us here who maybe because someone just dragged us here, but most of us are here because we care about winning the Super Bowl of spiritual life. And we want to live in a world of hope, and we want to share that hope. And we know as a church that we do have an opponent. As God's people, we have someone out there who is working against us to defeat us. Satan and his hosts want this world to be lost and hopeless and full of discouragement, and people saddled with sin and not knowing what to do with it. But God is calling us on his team to do our best, to work hard, to play hard, to not make mistakes, to aim for the best at all times. I mean, experts will tell you. 9 times out of 10, the team that comes out on top, the team that wins, is usually the team that makes the least mistakes, the fewest mistakes. Am I right? Fewer interceptions, fewer penalties. You remember the Bengals game from a couple of years ago. I hate to bring it up against the Pittsburgh Steelers, but the Bengals, they had finally, in my mind, they're beaten by the Bengals, the Steelers are. A.J. McCarron led the Bengals down the field the last part of the game, scored a touchdown. All the Bengals had to do, basically, after Pittsburgh, it turned it over or went three and out. I can't remember exactly what happened, but all the Bengals had to do was just hold on to the ball and not make a mistake. No stupid penalties. Just hang on to the ball, don't fumble. And it's almost, in my mind, like the Bengals, they got into the huddle and they said, okay, now, we need to call the fumble play, and how many penalties can we do to turn this thing around? And then that's like it happened. So if a team wants to come out on top, we want to aim for the best. We want to do our best. We want to play a clean game as best we can. And we also need a good coach. And I know there's quite a bit of debate about who the best coach in football is. I'm not even going to talk about college, but let's talk about the pros right now. In the pros, it's almost consensus that Bill Belichick is the best coach right now in pro football. You may disagree with that, it doesn't matter, but he's a good coach. And if a team is going to win, they need to pay attention to their coach and they need to listen to their coach. And I'm thinking along those lines, as our team, we have the best coach. We have the one and only coach. And he can coach us up. He can get the best out of us, not only because he can forgive us and give us life, but he can transform our lives in molding us into the best that we can be. Jesus is our Lord, our Savior, but Jesus, he's our coach too. And we need to pay attention to him, we need to listen to him. The team that listens to a good coach is going to come out on top. I want you to pay attention to something else, and this really is just the core main theme of what I want you to think about this morning, and that is this. If you're going to win, it's important that you pay attention to the time. It's important that you watch the clock. And if you plan on watching the game tonight, I want you to notice the number of times, not just the fact that as you watch the game, there's a clock underneath it, but it will also tell you what quarter it is, because in a football game, there are 60 minutes. Each of the quarters are 15 minutes each. At the end of the second quarter, that is halftime. And then 2 minutes before the end of the first half, you get the two-minute warning. And then you get the same two-minute warning at the end of the second half. You see how this whole theme of the clock and time, and all of the things associated with the clock, how much in football hinges on the clock. A lot of other sports too, but I'm just talking about football right now. And folks will tell you that the team that controls the clock is often the team that's going to win, the one that has the highest time of possession. A lot of what is done tonight is determined by the clock. You got to pay attention to the play clock because you need to call that play before the play clock runs out. There will be coaches who call time out sometimes during the game. The fact is, wouldn't it be nice in life if we could call a timeout and just pause time? We can't do that. But in the game of football, you can. You can stop the clock. But you need to pay attention to the clock, because if you don't pay attention to the clock, it's going to make a difference in whether you win or whether you lose many times. But what happens if the game ends, the clock runs out, and the teams are tied? Ah, that's when things change. That's when you don't know when the game's going to end, because the game goes into what? What's it called? Sudden death. sudden death. And the game ends when the team scores last according to the rules that you have, different in college and different in the pros. But the fact is, that kind of leads me into this point that really is the core message of James for this morning. Let's look at it, again. I guess a key point that we need to remember related to planning and living, and that is there are ways we need to understand that really to have a game-winning strategy, to understand that we can't control the clock. We can't. Now listen, you who say today or tomorrow we'll go to this or that city and spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. Why, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What's your life? You're a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it's the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast and brag. All such boasting is evil. Anyone then who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it sins. So, one point that James is making here that is implied in not only in this text, but he mentions it other places, and that is this truth. Death is certain. Death is certain. And those of you who know something about this computer screen, it doesn't occur as often as it used to occur back with older versions of Windows. If you were running that computer and that screen popped up, it wasn't good. The name of that screen, and there are different things they do now. Like I said, it doesn't happen as often as it used to, but some people call that the blue screen of death, which meant if that computer reaches that point, it's possible you might be able to recover your information. It is possible that you might be able to get it working again, but there is a very good likelihood it is gone, it's crashed, it's ended, it's died. And I don't know if you've ever had that experience of a device or a computer dying and you've lost all your information and you haven't backed it up. It's not a good feeling, is it? And so we've been talking about reboots and do-overs, but there is a point many times when you can't do that anymore. It dies, it crashes, no more second chances, no more do-overs, the game's over. And as James says, your life is like a mist. And if you live to be even 80 or 90 years old or 100 years old, some folks in here will live to be over 100 if Jesus doesn't come back before then. That's a long time, isn't it? It is and it isn't. Still a mist. The game of life, the spiritual game that we live and are playing, the game when it comes to this physical life ends, and it's uncertain when. Some of the toughest funerals I have spoken at are funerals where someone has died unexpectedly. It came out of the blue. The 18-year-old who died in the car accident. The not quite 2-year-old yet who died from SIDS. The young lady who died from a heroin overdose. And the surprises don't occur to those who were always young. I remember the first 5-6 years I was here, Mac and Rosemary Germany were members here. He was older, he was retired, but I tell you, he was active in his life. Good man. Helped me put drywall up in my house when I finished my downstairs. Great man. And one afternoon, he's with his son, and they are moving some furniture out on the interstate down that way. And they have a trailer, had trouble with the trailer, pulled off the side of the interstate to straighten up some furniture on a trailer, and a concrete truck came barreling down 275, and he was killed just like that. And I don't share this with you to, you know, frighten you or to be some kind of negative, you know, Debbie Downer here. You know, I went to church today, and what did the preacher talk about? Well, he talked about death. Super Bowl Sunday. He talked about dying. And he said, well, I want to go to that church. But listen, we have to talk about things in this game of life that matter the most. And when we're talking about reboots and startovers, we need to be reminded that there is a point when the final countdown comes and things end. It could be the second coming of Jesus. I appreciate the mention this morning, Rick, of the story when the disciples, they're looking up, and to me it's such a poignant moment when they're looking up and Jesus is being carried away in the clouds, and I believe angels spoke to them and said, why are you staring up in the sky? He's coming back in the same way. And so you look at the early church and you read your New Testament and you see how they thought and what they focused on, and it is clear that they focused on the reality and the expectation that Jesus was coming back. In fact, many of them felt like he was coming back, I mean, like very, very soon, like in their lifetime. And so you could read 2 Peter 3 that says that there were people even then in 60 and 70 AD who were asking the question, why hasn't he come back yet? 60-something A.D., asking, why hasn't he come back yet? He said he was coming back, and now we're in 2019. Fact is, we don't know when he's coming back, but we know he is returning. And that's not a scare tactic. That is reality. That is just understanding that we ought to have the spirit of the early church who had this saying in Aramaic, Maranatha, or Maranatha, Lord, come. And it's just a way to be reminded that as we are living our life and making our game plan, we need to think about some important things along the way. All right, I'm going to go through a couple of them real quickly here. The first one is this. A takeaway for you this morning, and that is, watch out what you assume. Because we know what happens when you assume something. And so, James, in this passage, says, somebody says, tomorrow I will go and do this or that. I will do this or do that. As if they know for a fact it's absolutely going to happen. But none of us has that kind of control. And that kind of assumption is arrogance. It is boasting because we are placing ourselves in the place of God. And there are some things we can control. There are some things we can't. I want to live healthy. I want to live a long life. I confess, I joined AARP this week. I held off as long as I could. And by the way, that doesn't mean I've reached retirement age. I have not. Just want to get the benefits. But if you go to the AARP site, you will see there on the left-hand side the menu, and at the top of the menu is an icon about health. And you look at a lot of the articles on that site. They're about taking care of yourself and living a long life and this or that. Even if we do all of that, and we have the attitude of the rich fool in the book of Luke who says, I'm going to do this. I have all these things. I'm going to build bigger barns. I'm going to store everything I have, and I'm going to live life and enjoy it, and I'm going to say to myself, enjoy these things and eat, drink, and be merry. And yet in that story, God says to him that night, today, your soul is going to be required of you. Now, who's going to possess what you have? And so the rich fool in Luke 12 makes the mistake of trusting in the wrong things instead of trusting in God and assuming that he had time when he doesn't have time. Second takeaway, keep God in your plans. Seek God's will as you plan. As I mentioned last week, I'm not saying that we shouldn't make plans. Your retirement account, the plans for the vacation next year, what you're going to do here, there, plans related to your family, certainly plans that we have here as a church and goals and dreams that we have as a congregation. But all of that needs to constantly be filtered through this filter of if the Lord wills. Amen? If the Lord will. And that's just not some formula to just say some words. It's an attitude of life. But I used to hear it a lot more than I hear it now. Down south, I'm looking at Nick in the back. Is that more common in the south? I think it's more common in the south. Somebody says, I'm going to do something so-and-so, and then what do they say right after they say it? Lord willing. But it's not just some magic formula. It's an attitude that says, listen, I'm going to keep seeking God's will. I'm going to pray for His will. I'm going to pray for His guidance. There are big decisions I have to make. There are crossroads I'm facing. And I'm leaning upon God to show me the way. And takeaway number three is this: live like you're dying. How's that for final point? All I'm saying is, live with the end in view. That's the point that James is making here. It's not a bad thing. It's not a negative thing. It's a good thing. It's a good winning strategy. It is. It's a good game plan. To think about knowing that the end comes, and I don't know when the end comes. What we do every week in the bulletin, on the back, we have connect points. And I encourage you to take a look at these. And some weeks they may apply to you, some weeks they may not apply to you. But one of the connect points that I have this week is to ask you to take the time to sit down to pray, meditate, or journal and think about, what if I just had 1 week to live? I mean, and you knew. We don't know, but you knew. Talked about this in small group last week. If you knew you had 1 week left, would it make a difference in what you did and how you treated people and the effort you would make to make relationships right? Or to do right by your family? Or to reach somebody that needs to be reached for Jesus? The fact is, those things are true whether I live a week or whether I live 30 more years. Live with the end in view. And here's the beautiful thing. Here's the beautiful thing. Where's that football? I want to see that football one more time. I'll catch it. You watch the game tonight. And this is going to happen if one team is leading at the end of the game. And if you're a fan and your team is winning, It's the most beautiful thing at the end of a football game. And it's called the victory formation. And so the clock is ticking down. The team with the ball is ahead. They don't have to run a fancy play or try to score. All they do is they go up to the line. The quarterback, he takes the ball. Everybody's bunched around him. And he takes two or three steps back. And you know what he does, don't you? It's done. We've won. And the beautiful thing about being on the team of Jesus is that even when the end comes, with Him, it's in Him and with Him forever. Instead of being cast away from His presence forever. And so, I don't know where you are this morning. You may just be here, and maybe you don't know where you are. You don't know what to make of a lot of these things. Well, I'm here to tell you this morning that I don't have every answer about everything. And I'm learning new things all the time. But I do believe I know, and we know Jesus. And we want you to know Him. We want you to know His hope, His power, His mercy, what He can do in your life now and in the future. And when the end comes, we're on that side of the ball, and we take the victory formation. And then we go home with Him forever. What's your need? Whatever that need is, we want to talk.